Welcome to Potter Revisited, episode 65. I'm Tori.
And I'm Shay.
Today we are jumping into chapter 5 of Goblet of Fire, Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
Or, as we like to call it, the Hot Weasley.
Love that. I love that so much.
I mean, we'll get into it.
So, from the last chapter, we talked a lot about the twins and the prank they played on Dudley, and here I am, just want to point out again, Fred and George had not tested this toffee.
Yeah.
Very big red flag.
Dangerous, risky business. But you kind of have to respect that they call it tongue toffee. And that in itself is such a tongue twister. Like, just saying it also sort of enacts the spell in it. It does it to you too. Your tongue also goes all over the place and gets tied up. And it's very, very clever.
I mean, when I was a kid, I probably read it as ton-ton. Ton-ton.
Who knows? I feel like I skipped over some words. I'm like, that's not a real word. Whoop.
Yeah. So in this chapter, we finally get to meet Bill and Charlie Weasley, who have been super mysterious in the last three books.
Just the other Weasleys. Vague. Mysterious.
But we will talk about them a bit more in detail a bit later. But continuing with the story, Mr. Weasley comes back from the Dursleys, and he is very angry.
Yeah, as he should be.
Trying to be a responsible dad. And Fred and George do claim that they only gave Dudley the toffee because he was bullied to Harry and not because he's a muggle. But, like, in Mr. Weasley's defense, he has a great point about just the optics of the fact that, like, it doesn't really matter if he's a bully to Harry. He still is a muggle. And, like you said last episode, like, giving a muggle a magical candy, probably not a great idea. And, like, if Mr. Weasley couldn't, like, help him and he had to bring other people, it just wouldn't be a good look for him and his work.
Specifically that his line of work is, like, the misuse of muggle artifacts. Like, the point of it is to make sure muggles don't accidentally get hurt by wizard things. And then his own children are intentionally hurting muggles with wizard things. Yeah, it is horrendous, horrendous optics. Mr. Weasley's mad. And we're like, yeah, Mr. Weasley's mad. But Mrs. Weasley, hell hath no fury. I think they would rather Voldemort torture them than the fury of Miss Weasley. I think they would rather serve a few months in Azkaban than face the wrath of Molly Weasley. And I agree. Like, the ground shakes, the world rumbles, everyone runs for the hills.
Even Mr. Weasley's trying to, like, kind of cover for them, and she's just like, nope.
He's like, they deserve to be punished, but not this severely. And Miss Weasley's like, what did they do?
Yeah.
It's weird that, like, Hermione's the one who realizes that Miss Weasley's about to be set off, and is like, gosh, guys, we should go upstairs. Like, it's funny that it's Hermione who doesn't even live there.
Yeah. I feel like Hermione's an only child, so I could see this being a bit, like, weird for her, like, just wanting to be, like, a spectator to someone getting in trouble. But I feel like when you have siblings, sometimes it's just, like, the way things are. Like, especially with the twins and Mrs. Weasley, I feel like they're always yelling at each other. So Ron's probably like, oh, this is normal.
I guess in my mind, it was more like, you'd think the siblings are more used to these situations, so are quicker to know the signs that Hell Hath No Fury is about to rain down and they'd get out of there. It's just interesting that Hermione, who's the least familiar with the situation, doesn't just, like, stand there kind of shocked and is, like, the quickest to be like, all right, time to socially engineer our exit. It's interesting. In my mind, it's like the twins should be like, we want to be out of here, but we can't be. And then Ron should be like, it's happening, and start backing away, you know? It's just so funny that Hermione is the one that's like, time to go.
When they're going up to Ron's room, Jenny and Ron kind of fill Hermione and Harry in about Fred and George and, like, their suites and, like, how they plan to sell these at Hogwarts. And I'm thinking, like, that's kind of a, I didn't really do it, but it's kind of a red flag because a lot of these products probably have not been fully tested and stuff. And, like, they are, could be dangerous and everything.
Absolutely. I think at least if they're being tested at Hogwarts, there's, like, some semi-educated adults there who can keep an eye on things. Okay, there's just Madame Pomfrey. Madame Pomfrey is there, so...
She's already overworked.
That poor woman deserves a vacation and a raise.
And they also kind of talk about kind of, like, the rift right now between Mrs. Weasley and the twins, because she's upset that the twins didn't get more owls, and... I just kind of feel like this really enforces the idea that, like, she wants them to go work at the ministry, like Percy and their dad. Like, it kind of reinforces the idea that everyone just goes to the ministry after school, which is kind of weird because in our day-to-day life, like, not everyone goes to work for the government.
Yeah, it's because the author hasn't introduced us to that many adult jobs in the wizarding world yet. So they have to be like, oh, what's an adult job that sounds kind of impressive? We know these government jobs exist. We'll just put him there. But I think it's interesting that, like, Molly's specifically calling the twins out and saying they have no ambition. When they do have ambition, it's just the things they're ambitious about are not the same things that she values or thinks are interesting.
I wonder if they had not a prank shop store or, like, a joke shop, if it was a different kind of business, she would have been more into it.
I think so.
But she sees that as childish. So she's like, that's not real.
Yeah.
Because we have, like, the quite serious jobs that, like, the older three have. Like, Percy obviously works for the ministry, mm-hmm. and then Bill works for the bank, and then Charlie works at Dragons, which are all kind of, like, serious-ish fields.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, like, again, she really wants the twins to aspire to a career at the ministry. Yet Percy has a career at the ministry and is really excited about it and excited about his cauldron report, which actually sounds pretty important.
Yeah, Percy is clearly loving his job.
I feel like you could hurt yourself if you don't have, like, a consistent regulation on cauldron, like, heat and thickness and materials. Like, that makes sense. I can understand how that's actually quite important. And he's really excited about it. And yet, the behavior that's being modeled at home is sort of making fun of Percy. Like, Percy's ambition is exactly the type of ambition Miss Weasley wants to see in the twins. Like, she wants them to be ambitious and work hard and get a good job at the ministry. Yet, the household culture is very much to, like, degrade and make fun of Percy for valuing his job and working hard. And, like, I can't see the twins looking at how the whole family treats Percy and knowing that they treat him and see him that way based on his ambition and then also wanting to experience that themselves. Like, she's being like, why don't you want to get a job at the ministry? At the same time, the entire family makes fun of Percy for working hard at his job at the ministry. Like, it's like people who, when their quiet child finally says something, is like, oh, wow, look who finally talk.
Look who came into the room. Yeah.
Which brings attention to them and makes them uncomfortable and is, like, socially punishing them for doing a desired behavior. And that's kind of how the treatment of Percy feels. And so I wouldn't want a job at the ministry either if I lived in a household with Percy who's degraded for it.
Yeah, because we can see when they walk past Percy's room, he kind of opens the door and kind of, like, tells him to be quiet. And he's obviously boasting about his job, and he definitely, like, wants, like, his siblings to, like, be in awe of, like, his great job and how well he's doing. But they just kind of use it as, like, a thing to tease him about.
Yeah, and Percy also repeatedly talks about his boss, Mr. Crouch, and they say the name again and again, and I think it's because the author knows that the readers are still kind of young, so, like, they're repeating the name so that it sticks in their minds and they remember it, because it's not just foreshadowing, it's, like, not a gentle hint. It's like a this name, remember this name, don't forget this name. So at the end, when things resolve, they can be like, oh, I remember that name. So it's like putting in the extra legwork now that's almost a bit annoying and repetitive to get the reader to have that sense of, like, fulfillment at the end and that aha moment.
But while they're preparing for dinner, Mrs. Weasley's kind of, like, giving all the kids jobs to go sit at the table and everything. And meanwhile, she's, like, ranting about Fred and George. And this is, like, very reminiscent if you grew up with siblings and, like, they did something.
Yeah.
And usually it's, like, your mom or someone's just like, oh, why would they do that? Where did I go wrong? And it's really funny. My mom was the one that did that, where if, like, one of my siblings did something that she wasn't happy about and we were just, like, you know, doing our day-to-day life, and then she'd just be, like, ranting about them while, like, we're just, like, you know, existing.
Yeah, for sure. Parents being like, where is your brother? He's been out so late. I have no idea where he, oh, why did he do this again? Or I'm sure, I mean, I was an angel.
So outside, Bill and Charlie are showing that they're definitely not like Percy, because they are, like, battling with the chairs in the air.
Yeah.
Trying to knock the other's chair out. Or not chairs, tables into each other, which I thought was funny.
It's like Beyblades.
Yeah. And then Percy opens his window to kind of, like, yell at them to be quiet because he's working. But I find that the way he talks to Charlie and Bill is a bit different than he would talk to friend George. Like, he's still pretty polite and he kind of is a bit sarcastic, like how Bill asks him how his report's going and he's like, very poorly. And I feel like if it was Fred, George, or Jenny, or Ron, he would have been a bit more, like, rude or angry.
Yeah. I think everyone sort of respects the older two brothers.
Yeah, he respects his older brothers.
They're interesting, they're cool, you don't... Like, it's sort of like you get less sick of the annoying sibling the less you see him. Like, when you see them, you appreciate them more. So I feel like because he doesn't live with Bill and Charlie, even if they did things that used to piss him off a lot, because they're just visiting now and it's more rare, it bothers him less. And also, like, they're both kind of seen as successful. So for Percy, he can say, like, they're kind of annoying and goofy and silly, but they do well.
He definitely kind of looks up to them. And I feel like they also are not like Fred and George. So I'm sure him growing up with Bill and Charlie was a bit different than him having to put up a friend George.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like if Percy had a homework question, he could ask Bill or Charlie. Well, I mean, I don't really know what Charlie's, but Bill we know was very, very smart. So, like, he definitely can see parts of himself in those two that he probably can't see in the other siblings. He doesn't see them as much, so he doesn't get as annoyed at them. And they're cool. We'll get into it, but they're cool.
But during the dinner, we get kind of like this tidbit that Mr. Weasley helped out Ludo Bagman's brother, and that's how he got the Wizard World Cup tickets.
Yeah. Let's get into that. So Ludo Bagman's brother did something that was against the rules or laws specifically pertaining to Arthur Weasley's line of work. So it's he enchanted a lawnmower, a muggle's lawnmower, to do I don't know what. But he broke the rules. And Mr. Weasley, instead of following, like, whatever the procedure is for that, like a write-up, a warning, a fine, I don't know, didn't do that and let Ludo's brother off with some sort of lesser punishment or sort of swept it under the rug. And now, because he did that sort of nice favor for Ludo, his family's being given tickets to the Quidditch World Cup.
And good tickets.
And we always talk about, like, how people like Lucius Malfoy, oh, he works for the Ministry, but he's a bad guy, so he's corrupt. Or, like, a bunch of other, like, we find out, like, Pious Thickness. Like, there's a bunch of guys that work at the Ministry that end up being Death Eaters, and everyone's like, ooh, the Ministry is corrupt. But what Arthur Weasley just did is accepting payoff or goods in exchange for a lessened or dropped charges, which is literally corruption. By definition, dishonest or fraudulent conduct by those in power, typically involving bribery. So, like, he's not malicious in it. He's not doing it because he's evil and he wants to destroy the world, but he absolutely is partaking in corruption as a government official.
Yeah, it definitely shows that the Ministry is a corrupt place. Like, people do payoffs and, like, bribes and stuff like that.
I mean, I guess it's probably the truth with all government. There's corrupt government officials who are taking money away from important public works projects and putting it in their own pocket. And then there's corrupt government officials who are doing slightly illegal smart accounting to get more funding for their public works projects to help their people, or fudging the rules so that people can get whatever, like, to help people or to not hinder people versus malicious intent and selfishness. So, like, there's certainly, like, a scale of corruption, and Arthur Weasley's on, like, the lower level of that scale. But it's still interesting in sort of a book that talks a lot about shades of gray and not just good and evil. It's interesting that we're seeing that within the government as well.
Also interesting, we get hints of Bertha Jorkins and how she's missing, which is interesting because we obviously read the first chapter, so we, as the readers, know that Bertha Jorkins is dead. But everyone else, the characters that we know in the story, they think she's missing.
And they didn't have to say the name Bertha Jorkins 10 times in the first chapter for us to remember it, because it is memorable as the goddamn worst name in wizard history, Bertha Jorkins.
Also interesting is that when talking about the World Cup, we get a Victor Krem mention, like, right before Behiga kind of becomes a big player.
We're like, ooh, who's Victor Krem? Is he the Sidney Crosby of Quidditch?
Sounds like that. He's the only good player on the team, apparently, according to Charlie.
Okay, the Penguins were good. The Carey Price.
Of the Habs.
We have to think of an athlete who had no team behind him or in front of him. A standalone athlete in a team sport. Yeah, so that's fun. We get some sort of tidbits of famous Quidditch players. But what we also get in this chapter, and I know you've been longing for and craving and dreaming of since the very first time we got to the Burrow, is just warm, cozy Burrow vibes. Like, there are wellies by the door. There are gnomes in the garden. It's the perfect English country home. I bet the floors creak in, like, very familiar and reassuring ways and places. I bet there's one roof leak that just keeps leaking, and they just have a cooking pot that just lives under that leak, and they empty it every time after it rains. Like, I feel so at home along with these characters.
It's so nice being back at the Burrow.
Yeah, it's we feel like we've gone home too. Like, it's so cozy, and, like, outside at night, and, like, they're sipping on, like, elderflower wine or whatever, and, like, everything smells good, whimsical. There's magical candles, the smell of honeysuckle, there's potatoes. I mean, freaking love potatoes. And it's honestly such an idyllic evening. I really don't even blame Harry for electing not to bring up his scar hurting or anything. Like, it seems like such a good time and such a rare, lighthearted loving environment that, like, I don't think I'd bring it up prematurely either. I'd be like, this can be postponed.
Yeah. Harry's just at peace. He's like, I don't want to worry them with this, like, lovely evening coming to an end.
We'll bring it up when it becomes relevant to the plot. But right now, potatoes.
But the chapter kind of ends because everyone's having, like, their own conversations. But Percy's trying to hint to the kids, being like, oh, I have an important job that's coming up. Like, we're doing an important event. And he really wants them to ask him about it.
Besides the Quidditch World Cup, the other important thing.
But they're just like, oh, Percy's boring, so it's probably about cauldron bottoms or whatever. And the twins kind of admit to sending Percy dragon dung at work.
Gross.
Which seems a bit much.
Yeah, they send him poop in the mail, which is... it's gross and not actually funny. Like, the haha we sent him poop is not funny. The fact that Percy thought it was a legitimate fertilizer sample and that he should actually look at it, that's funny.
I mean, I feel like Percy kind of knew. I think he said that to kind of save face, but I feel like he kind of knew it was from Fred and George.
In my mind, he, like, was like, I wonder why I got sent poop. That's weird. And then he, like, went into the offices and checked in, like, to see if there's any recent things on poop he should know about, and then saw something about fertilizer regulation and was like, oh, it's a fertilizer sample, and like sent it to the science team to check if it had the right soil acidity per the regulations. Like, I like to think he was like, oh, there has to be a reason for this. I'm gonna research. Oh, there is something. And like, did the work. Did he do the legwork?
Let us know if you think that Percy knew it was from Fred and George, or if you think he thought it was a fertilizer. But also, I can kind of understand at this point, Percy, you know, distancing himself from the family at this point, because no one respects him.
They send him poop. That's awful.
Exactly. Like, who wants to be putting up with that? Like, we talked a lot about last chapter how it's like kind of like the gray area of Fred and George, where like we always see them as like good characters because they're always on the good side and like they're fun. But like they do a lot of things where you're like, huh, if this wasn't to a character we like it's to Percy or to Draco, we think it's funny. But if it's done to Harry or someone that's like a good character or whatever, like that's kind of mean. That's kind of rude.
Yeah, it's totally who is the victim of the crime that determines what we think is actually a crime or how severe something is, which is incredibly biased of us. But listen, we were 14. Leave us alone.
Yeah, we were children. But that kind of ends the chapter, but we do have two new Weasleys to discuss.
Yeah. So we've got Charlie and Bill.
Yeah. So we've heard a lot about Charlie and Bill through Ron, the beginning of the chapter, and how he kind of idolizes, especially Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to like have our perceptions of like what Charlie and Bill were like, because Charlie's described as like working with dragons. So obviously outdoorsy guy.
Kind of gruff.
And Bill's kind of described as just being like a prefect head boy, really smart. So you kind of think about him like Percy, but he is definitely not like Percy.
Yeah. So I did a bit of investigation just to get an understanding of sort of where all the Weasley children sort of stand at this point. So I got there, I looked into what the ages were in at this point, approximately. Again, I don't know what month they're all born and I'm not Googling that. So basically Ginny's about to start what would be her third year. So Ginny's 13, making Ron 14. Twins are 16, Percy is 18, Charlie is 21, and Bill is 23. So it's interesting just because it lets us understand, like, okay, Percy is, like, fresh out of school, starting his first job, gonna work his way up, and we can see from the ages, A, how no post-secondary education makes it a lot faster to track from, like, student to someone who's, like, established in their field. Because it seems like Bill is pretty well respected in his field and Charlie is too, but they're so young and fresh out of school, really.
It kind of reminds me going to kind of like a trade versus like post-secondary, because like Percy's obviously working in like admin or whatever. So it took a while for him to go up. But I think post-secondary, more physical jobs is just more of like, do you have the skills to do this thing?
Yeah, I feel like it's probably a very physical job for Charlie, but Bill's is probably a combination. Like, he's a curse breaker, so it's equal parts, like, research and physical magic. And, like, in my mind, he's, like, archaeologying it up. Like, he's a tomb raider. He's totally going into enchanted tombs in other countries and robbing their cultural heritage, and I know that. I know he's Indiana Jones, but ginger and British. And he's absolutely not respecting foreign cultures when he takes their goods for the British Wizarding Museum or the bank.
Yeah, taking things for the British Museum. Like, just like the British do.
Basically is what he's doing. He's selling them to the bank. Like, he works for the bank. So he's, in my mind, like, wizards hide their goods in caves sometimes, and they use curses to protect them. Sort of like in Indiana Jones, where there's traps set up to prevent him from getting to, like, the Crystal Skull or whatever. So Bill, like, shows up to a cave, thinks there might be treasure, breaks all the curses, you know, descends through the top of the cave. He's spelunking. He's adventuring. There's a monster. He fights it. There's a curse. He breaks it. There's a pile of gold. And then the bank takes a large portion because he works for them. And then he probably gets a cut, or he has a salary, or he has a salary plus a cut, depending on how much gold he finds.
Yeah, like a commission.
Yeah, exactly. But that's how I picture it. So, like, it's a really cool and exciting job. Not cool if he is not appropriately giving the right actual cultural heritage items back to the countries they're in.
Yeah. I mean, the British doesn't even do that now, so.
They don't do that. They don't do that. I mean, we don't know. But it's a cool job. Like, it's really cool when you think about it. And I don't know a lot about dragons because I've never met one. I watch a lot of archaeology shows, so I can relate to Bill. I don't know about Charlie, but it's probably awesome. Like, I don't know what he's doing with the dragons, if he's training them or preserving them.
Well, I think it might be a bit of kind of like anthropology, where he's studying them, but he's also caring for them and stuff. And like, because dragons, I assume, would be
hard to care for
because they're used in potion ingredients and stuff. They might be like, some of them might be endangered.
Yeah, he's in conservation, I guess. So like, breeding dragons is probably very important because they're needed for potion ingredients, but also they're cool.
Yeah.
So you probably have to train them a little to not eat you while you like bring them their food or introduce them to their future dragon spouse. So it's probably a very cool job. I think I'd rather be an archaeologist, an ethical archaeologist. Point is, they have really cool jobs. They're very interesting. And like, it's really interesting how the sibling energy we get from the Weasleys is so authentic. Yes. In these moments. Like, they're being goofy, they're being silly, they're back-talking each other, they're rolling our eyes, they're emotionally preparing for their mother to go off, having been there before. Like, it's very... I think I only had one sibling, so it's a little different. But, like, you had two siblings, so there's three of you, and I was there all the time. So, like, I can see it so close to having been at your family's home and, like, seeing it all go on. It's so familiar and, like, comfortable. I will say the sad thing is that, like, even the older siblings don't seem to actually be close to Percy. Like, no one seems to actually...
I think they're close in, like, their own way, but they've been out of the house for a while.
Yeah, but they also sort of laugh at him and joke, and they seem to be kind of lighthearted and ready to make fun of him for working hard and stuff, too. Which I think is sad, because there's a part of me that, like, was hoping there was a Weasley somewhere we hadn't met yet who tells Percy, wow, you did so great, you worked really hard, wow. I don't know a lot about Cauldron Bottoms, but... I can see how that could be really important. I'm proud of you. You could really help people. Think of what other things you can get if this goes well.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think Percy really needs the feedback.
Yeah, and I was hoping that, like, since there were two siblings we hadn't met and the way they were described, I was like, maybe one of those is Percy's person in the family. And I don't think that now, having seen how they are together, and that's a little bit sad.
Yeah.
But what I do love is how, I mean, Charlie, we get a bit about Charlie. He likes dragons. He's cool. But we get a lot about Bill in this chapter. And, like, they kind of go off about Bill. Like, first of all, Harry's like, the only way to describe Bill is cool. And that's so 14-year-old boy. Like, I'm picturing him seeing a guy on, like, a motorcycle who has, like, cool shoes and, like, leans on things. Like, I'm like, oh, he's just cool. That's what he is. He's effortless, but awesome. He's dangerous, but intriguing. Like, he's just really cool.
Is this like Harry's bisexual awakening? Because it's just the way Bill's described.
Yeah, it's like a very relatable language, though, for like to come from a 14-year-old boy.
Well, especially because Harry's always imagined the older siblings in a certain way. And the way Bill was described, it sounds like an older Percy.
Yeah.
And so seeing this like being like the anti-Percy.
He's like, what? You could be cool and also smart? I didn't know. Hermione, you didn't tell me.
Well, Hermione doesn't know how to be cool.
But I think it's great. And they describe Bill in such an... I mean, he's described so cool. He has long hair, which automatically means he's kind of a rebel. And he has an earring.
Fang earring.
Again, rule breaker. He's dangerous. It's a fang. Like, I wonder if it's a dragon fang. Did he fight something? Did Charlie gift it to him? I want to know where the fang came from. it's cool and his job is impressive, but he's also not viewed as like a tryhard like Percy. It's like this effortlessly cool.
He's like, oh yeah, I break curses for a living, whatever.
Exactly. And I think as someone who's reading the book, when you're like Harry and Ron's age, like we were when we first read it, sort of young teens, you don't really think about Bill that much, but he's just clearly meant to be like the hot Weasley. You know what I mean? Like, they sort of have like a quick write-off defining thing for each of the Weasley children, right? I mean, Ginny is the girl. There's only one. Ron is the baby boy. He's the youngest son. Last chance to get it right. And then the twins are, I mean, they're prankster one, they're prankster two. Pranking is like their defining trait. Percy's the boring one.
Poor Percy.
I mean, Charlie's the dragons one, because literally all we know about Charlie is dragons. So like, cool, he's the dragons one. And Bill is absolutely the hot one. And that's what they want us to take away from this. And I don't think I realized that they wanted me to feel that way.
I think it's also like pushed because Mrs. Weasley always talks about how handsome Bill is. He just needs to cut his hair. So she's kind of like...
But she's a mom. So you think, oh, she probably thinks he's not handsome. He's just, she's his mom and she loves him.
Yeah. And it's her first boy. Yeah. I mean, there might be some weird like boy mom ideology going on there.
But I just think it's funny that, like, I didn't realize how much they wanted us to read. Okay, he's the hit. That's the thing to remember. And then when you find out what you do later about who Bill ends up with romantically, who's also sort of just, like, hot, gorgeous, beautiful, floats when she walks. You're like, oh, there's like, you know who's hot? Bill. Don't forget Bill's hot. And then they're like, you know who's the hottest lady ever? This flirt chick. They're like, hot people. Just remember that.
Putting the hot people together.
I mean, it's really groundbreaking. Really, but also a little goofy when you think about it. Like, it's a bit of a big age difference because she first sees Bill now, right?
Yeah, I am looking forward to talking about kind of like the age difference because we also have Hermione with Crumb, who's 4 years older than her. And then Fleur has to be 17 and Bill's 23. So it's also like they didn't get together till after she was in school, but still it's kind of like, huh.
Yeah, like 17 and 23 is weird. But if you just then it's weird. But I think it's not a huge age gap a few years later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when one of you is still a teen, it's a huge age gap. But once Fleur's in her early 20s, it's more okay, I think. It's just weird right now. But I think we don't get a lot of how Bill thinks about Fleur now. We get more of how Fleur thinks about Bill, which is, ooh, who's that hot, mysterious man?
Yeah, we don't really get much about how they got together or anything because it's just kind of like... a side thing being like front and George like, oh, guess who Bill's dating, and then all of a sudden they're engaged.
It makes sense to me that Fleur would see Bill from a distance as a 17-year-old girl and him as a 23-year-old rebel and be like, yes, absolutely, because like I was a 17-year-old girl once too, and that's exactly how it's exactly how it was. But like, hopefully it's a few years later when she's an adult and Bill's like, oh, look at that cool adult too.
Bill does definitely seem like he would have been your type, like, back when you were, like, in high school.
I mean, I'm just, Snape was my type. That's the problem. But if I wasn't so blinded by Severus Snape.
But you're also into, like, edgy bands and people that were just older than you.
Yeah. Bill could have been the bassist in some sort of British band that I would have been into.
But do you have any final thoughts on this chapter before we wrap up, besides Bill?
I mean, I think that's what we get from the chapter. We get to know a bit more about the Weasleys. We get more comfortable in their home life. We find out Arthur is corrupt. We realize that Molly Weasley could probably fight all the Death Eaters at once and kill them if she wanted to, because she is the true thing to fear in the wizarding world. And we get to meet the other Weasley brothers, and I think that's cool, and I think that's fun, and I think I feel bad for Percy.
Yeah, poor guy.
Again, I'll feel bad for Percy until he is adjacent to what happens to Fred, and then I'll be mad at Percy for a while. But until that happens, maybe a bit when he's ignoring his family, but like right now, I understand why he would want to be a bit separated from his family. I get it. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, my thoughts are that this chapter is just kind of like setting up like a lot of different things. Like we're finding out about Bertha Jorkins, Mr. Crouch, and we get to meet the two new Weasley brothers that we haven't met before. And it's just like kind of laying all the groundwork for things that are going to be happening later on in the series, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. They do fit a lot of foreshadowing into this chapter without sort of it feeling just like...
It feels pretty natural. Like, I think we've discussed a lot of like the other chapters in this, the first few chapters in this book felt like very much like they were just dragging things on, and mm-hmm. it was just very much like a plot device kind of way, but this feels very natural.
Yeah, chapters 2 to 4 were basically...
Harry is a wizard.
Yeah. Did you know Harry is a wizard and his parents are dead and his aunt and uncle suck? I also sort of feel like they sprinkled the foreshadowing very sparingly and in a way that like made it very natural and made it very good to read. So like we get a lot of things that are going to be important later, and she decided to what degree she wants them to sink in by repeating Crouch 5 times. And I think it was well done. On top of a cozy layer of warm, loving family energy, it was a very satisfying chapter.
Feels like going back home, like you said, with the burrow and everything, and we get all the Weasleys there, and there's the excitement about the Quidditch Cup, and everything just feels like mm-hmm. summer and happy.
If you don't think about Percy at all, it's the kind of chapter of a book you would just want to pick up and read a chapter when you're having a bad day. You're like, you know, it's a nice, soothing cup of tea of a chapter. Like, it really is just like a nice orange Pekoe, you know? It's familiar, it's soothing, it's just right.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much everything for this chapter, but we'll be getting into more content soon. Finally have like a nice big meaty chapter for us to dive into.
Stuff. Some stuff is going to happen. We're going to have to talk about sports again.
Oh yeah. Well, let Shay handle that because she's the one that knows sports.
Yes,
yeah, sports. I'm just like, oh, that's fun.
Speaking of sports, and this should stay in the podcast, the Professional Women's Hockey League has really been taking off.
Yay.
In Canada and in the States, listeners. And you should absolutely, not just hockey, but find out what professional women's leagues exist in your area and go out and support and watch, because I don't know why or how the world decided that they weren't going to appreciate women's sports as much as men's, but it was a terrible mistake. It is such good hockey to watch. And the Montreal team is playing a game at the Bell Centre, which is where our NHL team plays. And the tickets sold out in an hour after being made available. So if you thought women's sports was not desirable, it is. So get some tickets to your local games and support them.
Not just hockey, any sport.
Yeah. Basketball? Women's basketball is huge in the States. As it should. Go out and grab a ticket to a hockey game. Support the Muggle Ginny Weasleys of the world.
Yep, so thank you for listening to this episode of Potter Revisited, and we'll be back to discuss Chapter 6 of Goblet of Fire, The Portkey. Of course, if you have any questions or anything you'd like us to discuss, you can reach us on social media at Potter Revisited or email us at potterrevisitedpodcast@gmail.com, and we will see you next time.
Bye!